listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Here are your hosts, Kieran Burke and Gary Riley.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. It's Series 10, Episode 11 coming your way this week. Kieran Burke and Gary Riley with you as ever. We're brought to you by Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lightning, AV solutions. And our charity bet sponsors are Bar One Betting. Gary, how are we?
All right, not too bad, Kieran. Happy enough with someone winning in my life.
Yeah.
Thank you, Longford Town.
Longford back to win away at the weekend. Should say on this week's show, we got some really, really good content coming up on the show tonight. We will be joined by the chairman of Meath FC. That is Mark Jacob. We're going to hear all about Meath FC's plans to hopefully join the League of Ireland in the coming years. And I was at the game in Oria last Friday between Dundalk and Derry City. And I have to say, I got two really, really interesting post-match interviews done there with Kieran Kilduff and with Tiernan Lynch. James McLean obviously sent off in that game. So quite a bit to talk about. And we'll hear from all of those people on the show throughout the course of the night. But unfortunately, it was a reduced Premier Division schedule over the weekend. We had a couple of games postponed late in the day. But Sligo Rovers, surprise winners in Daly Mount Park. Pats beaten by Shamrock Rovers. And as a result, Rovers, after what, 9-10 games, Gary, they've already hit the front. Is it looking ominous for everybody else?
Yeah, I think it is. The expectation was always that they would gather themselves up at some point. I think I said the Pats would win, but probably like a disappointing result. Like, I know the goal even was a deflected off. Was it a horse head that deflected it into the back of the net?
Yeah, I think you're right.
So, like, you know, these things happen. It could have been a tighter game. I know there was plenty of chances throughout the game, and it was probably always going to be a very tight result on Friday. But do Pats have the required, you know, stones to go the distance, like, and be challenging? Like, we'll say, I don't think there's going to be Rovers pulling away to any great extent. I think from what we've said over the last number of years is that we want a title challenge of some description, and it to be in the balance coming into the last lock of games.
Yeah, well, I suppose the concern on that front is Pats have been a bit watery over the last year or so, or even down the years. Bows are starting to slide. Now, we've got the Dublin Derby obviously coming up this weekend, and Bows always seem to turn up for that one. So if they win there, we're having an entirely different conversation next week. Oh, Bows have beaten Rovers. They've proven their title credentials, etc., etc. But if that result doesn't go Bows' way, you're looking at Rovers there. And aside from Pats, unless the likes of Shells and Derry can gather it up in the not too distant future, you're looking at Rovers and thinking, many challengers that they actually have. And that's been the problem in the last few years. Even last year, Rovers won it with a modest enough points tally compared to previous years.
Yeah.
And okay, they only won it by 3, but they may as well have won it by 33. There was nobody to challenge them. That's just a fear that maybe we have again this season. I know that's a bit of a theme in the hotline this week as well.
Yeah, like I think there's definitely an element to that. You know, who's going to make the step up? Who's going to be the challenger? As you mentioned, Pats, watery. Bows, I do still think they're going to have one of their better seasons in the last few years, but I don't think that's going to be a real concern for Rovers. Even if you take the game on Friday, Bows lost at home to Sligo, surprisingly enough. I think Bows would do that more often throughout the season than what Shamrock Rovers will do, and I think Pats will do it as well. So on a straight, you know, I don't think Rovers are going to fill the togs as much as the other teams.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, the togs are well filled in Derry, and to a degree filled enough in Shells. So when you look at it like that, I'm not going to just say, oh yeah, 100%, you know, Rovers are going to run away with it now once they get their noses in front. I don't think there's a real element to that. I just think they're not going to, you know, make a hames of it in the required frequency to give teams a chance. So
A defence I was going to offer of Pat's losing back-to-back games is the injuries that they've picked up. Boysel, Bezzetti, Keane, Palmer and Power all out. But you look at the Rovers team the other night, no Cleary, no Gaffney, no Grace, no Mandreau, no Watts.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Rovers...
But just on that, like that's the thing that you hear every lad on the telly and on other podcasts, and probably including us talking shite as well. But like, it's not but wealth of talent. It's the deepest squad in world football, apparently. So like, you know, missing those types of players. Graham Burke was playing the other night. Jack Byrne was playing the other night. These lads make differences.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't be without Mandreau. You can be without Grant or whoever. These lads are still going to be a difference maker throughout a game. And they're going to do that far more often than other teams in the at the top of the table. So it's as simple as that, really.
So that's the picture at the top of the table. Rovers taking control of it early in the season. Just on that Sligo Rovers result, I'd have to look back and see, and I know we had a shocker in the Predictions League last week, so I doubt any of us got this. I wonder, did I just happen to go for a draw on this by any chance? I must have a quick look, but the point I was going to make, obviously, I wasn't overly impressed with Bowes against Drogheda, and then they had another poor result off the back of that. Was this the game directly after Drogheda? The drew at Waterford, didn't they, last week?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
So they've had a couple of bags. They've gone five without... without a win all of a sudden. I went for a 0-0 here. So it was a surprise to see Sligo going up there and winning last Friday. But I wasn't surprised that Bowes dropped points. But just from a Sligo perspective, this is obviously a huge, huge morale booster for them.
Absolutely, sure.
I mean, after last week's episode was published on Twitter, one of the kind of snippets we had out there was a segment about John Russell that a lot of people in the hotline last week were calling for him to go. We put the tweet out.
Were
there,
they? Yeah.
There was a real split opinion. We had a good little debate going on the socials there. There was several Sligo Rovers fans getting in touch, some for Russell and some against. So a bit of a mixed opinion on Russell at the moment. But I think me and you last week on the pod were quite adamant that, like, you know, look at the squad of players he has. Look what he's working with. I'm not sure that I think what I said on the show last week, I'm not sure who else would go in there and do a better job, really. And John Russell just quieting down all of that talk with that result Friday.
Yeah, but look, one result doesn't make a season. But for Sligo Rovers in the position that they're in, any away win like that, especially against a team that's towards the top of the table, you know, that is such a fuel. You'd imagine that would be such fuel for, you know, the training session on Monday morning. You know, we're not that far away, you could argue. We're not getting blown apart too often. We can make the right challenges in the game. Especially, you know, I'm sure they would have been looking at the Waterford result against Bowes as well to be like, right, these boys could be got at. Waterford are shite. They're worse than us. Can we do one better than what they did against Bowes? And they went ahead and did that. They need to obviously capitalize on that and not follow it up with a baiting. Who are they playing this weekend?
They're playing Waterford this weekend. So the point I was going to make, we're often critical of teams in this league, say like the likes of Derry in recent years. When Rovers slip up, they never capitalize. Sligo Rovers the other night know that Waterford's game is off, postponed. They're sitting around looking and they see that result come through from De Leon. That's an absolute kick in the stones. That's exactly what you need to do before you go and play them. If they beat them Friday, suddenly 7 points clear of them.
Yeah. And that seems like a real insurmountable task because...
That is... Like, you'd be looking at that fixture coming up Friday and thinking, right, this is a relegation six-pointer. This is a huge game. I wouldn't say all the pressure, but probably a good chunk of the pressure is now on Waterford after what happened last Friday. Because as you said, if Sligo beat them 7 points, they really feel like they're cut adrift.
100%. And like, there's such an incentive for Sligo to dominate and get the 3 points here. Like, you have such an opportunity to go.
They're at home as well on Saturday.
Yeah, we're putting clear daylight between that. And not only for them, but like how demoralizing that would be for Waterford. Do you know what I mean? Like, that'd be a right kick in the bollocks. So like, you have to be looking at it and to be like, right, we have to, from a Waterford point of view, I'd be like, Jesus, we just can't lose this one. You know, this is such a vital game. Like, this could be a turning point in the season for these two teams. It's a bit of a crossroads, and I think if Sligo win it, I think it'd be just such a body blow. And then the pressure really comes on John Daly and Waterford as well. You're having that part of the conversation. Who do you get in? Mm. You get some other Baldy in from Fleetwood again. See what happens there. You know, loan a load of players from Fleetwood or whatever way they work it to pull it out of the fire. And, you know, that gets tiring enough as well from a Waterford point of view. Look, let's not go down that road yet. I'm really getting into a premonition type of conversation there, but I think this is huge for Sligo to build on what they did in Daly Mount the other night.
Yeah, elsewhere then, as I said, I was at the game on Friday between Dundalk and Dundalk and Derry, and I spoke to both Kieran Kilduff and Tiernan Lynch after the game.
Did you have a nice time?
The interview with Killer, I thought, was really, really interesting. So this isn't something we normally do on the pod. Usually those interviews are exclusive for the members club. And sometimes we'd play little snippets here and tell people if they want the full thing, they can get on the members. I'm going to play the full Killer interview this week because I thought what he said was really, really, really interesting. I just want to play a little bit of the Tiernan Lynch interview where I asked him a couple of questions specifically about James McLean. And then I'll pick up some commentary from you after this. So this is what Tiernan Lynch had to say after Friday's game in Oriel Park.
I know you've probably been asked about James McLean more than any player, but and I'm aware you're managing a chronic injury issue there, which came out last week. But does he look like he's low on confidence? Have you spoken to him about his form or his place in the team?
I think, listen, people, because of the level that James played at and the type of player James is, then people are probably expecting James to Roy the Rover stuff, and unfortunately that's just not the way the world works. James is someone that is carrying a hip injury and a strain there, and he plays in a lot of pain at times, but he's just, as I say, he's the type of person that he is. He wants to keep fighting, he wants to keep pushing, and until he's carried out in the box, I think James will keep trying.
And even with that injury, do you feel he's bringing plenty to the team?
Yeah, listen, James is a huge character. Lots of experience, good around the place. The boys all look up to him. So the James offers a lot, yeah.
And just on your travel down here, did you have any issues today?
No.
Good to hear.
Bus was too warm.
Cheers, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, that was Tiernan Lynch after Friday's game in Oriel Park. Again, there is a longer and extended interview there with Tiernan, and you can hear that on the Between the Stripes Members Club. Go to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI/membership. You'll find all of our exclusive content there. But I found it very interesting, Gary, and I'll get to kind of the wider interview in a second, but just about James McLean, who was obviously sent off, having come on as a second half substitute. And
what was the score when he came on? Was it was 2-2 at that point, was it?
Oh, geez, that's a good question. I think it was 2-2 at that point, yeah.
Okay. Let me just check just to be sure there, because it might, the reason I asked that, right, is because what was, we'll say, the idea from
Bringing him on, yeah.
Bringing him on.
Let me just refresh my own memory there. I think it was a draw at the time.
No, it was. Tehan scored for
Dundalk
in the 79th minute.
And McLean came on at 61.
Yeah. So he came on, we'll say, maybe to
try and shore things up, see it out.
Or get a third.
Yeah. Well, they could have actually got a third. Now, Dundalk were sickened they didn't win this game. It would have been a travesty if they didn't come away with at least a point. Even if I was a Dundalk fan, I would have definitely felt like this was a 2 points drop situation. They battered Derry for large periods of this game, but there was a stage when they were 2-1 down and they were pushing bodies forward and they got done on the counter. And Josh Thomas was in on goal. He skinned his man out on the wing. It was a lovely bit of skill. He got in and he curled it wide of the post. That was right to make it 3-1. If that had gone in, they'd probably win the game. But aside from that, they created absolutely nothing. Their two goals were very fortuitous, particularly the second one. It was a free kick on the edge of the box and they hit the wall and it came back in, and then it took a deflection off one of their own players. I think it was Akinyemi. It just hit. He knew nothing about it. Right on the stroke of half time, and it went in. So they got a couple of very fortunate goals there. I thought they were so negative with their approach. I thought their style of football, I thought as well, players didn't look like they knew their roles. They didn't look comfortable. It was interesting to note Winchester, who was the captain on the night, coming over, having real animated discussions several times with Tiernan Lynch. He didn't seem to know what was wanted of him. So I found that very interesting. But just to go back to the point I was going to make about the interview, McLean comes on and he's miles off it, Gary. Absolutely miles off. He barely got a touch. One of the first touches he got it right in the center of the pitch, and he's kind of on the half turn, and he's just so sluggish, like, in taking the ball in and doing anything with it. A. Dervin just goes through him, takes the ball, takes the man, takes everything. That wasn't a foul, like, perfect bit of play from Dervin. But right. I was just like, Jesus, this lad is...
Oh, he'll probably be called for attempted murder now or something, really.
But, like, the only thing he done when he came on was foul players, pull lads down, kick lads. He was just so far off it. So I asked Tiernan after the game, as you heard there, about James's confidence, his form, his role in the team. And Tiernan pointed out, obviously, what we all knew, that James is managing a chronic pain issue. And he made the point that James is playing through the pain barrier regularly. And I asked the question then, do you still feel he's bringing something to the team in that case? And I found it very interesting. Sorry, I know I've used that word about 55 times there in the last few minutes. Found it very interesting that he talked a lot about, oh, James is bringing, you know, I don't have the exact quotes in front of me, but character. And he was talking about, oh, the fact he's played at a higher level and the lads look up to him and the dressing room and a great lad, and he'll have to be carried off in a box before he gives up. He never actually said anything about his technical qualities or what he's bringing to the team. For me, if McLean is in that bad of shape, if he's really struggling through the pain barrier that much, what on earth is he doing coming on at all? He shouldn't be in the matchday squad.
Yeah, it's a very interesting. It is strange to see why, you know, right. The reason I asked the question about what the score was at the time, if you're Tiernan Lynch, why am I bringing on a small hospital here who hasn't really brought much to the side since he joined? And, you know, I mentioned the stuff about characters last week, and people were jibing me online saying that it was wrong or whatever. But, like, I haven't seen much character since. That was only a week ago I said that. But where's this character stuff? Like, I don't really see it. So if that's what you're bringing on, James McLean, like, you know, if the lads look up to him and they love him and he's a great lad to have around and he played at such a high level, and this and that and the other, and he played in this and he played in the Euros and all the other shit that people go on with, well then, you know, put him as the mascot. Do you know what I mean? Like, what's he doing on the pitch? If he's not able to, physically able to give 100% and he's playing through the pain barrier, that's great. But that's really good, like, if, you know, you have 12 players in a squad.
That's the sort of thing I'd expect to hear a Sligo Rovers or a Waterford manager coming out with, or a Drogheda manager. You know, we don't have the same resources, so we have a lad here. We have Ryan Brennan, and his hips are broke.
He's all over the shop.
Now, his hips aren't broke. He's fine. But I'm just making the example. He's fine, but he's going to come on here because, you know, we don't really have much else. That's fine. This is Derry City. I was just looking around me, like, even looking at the likes of Michael Duffy in the stand and a few other boys that were knocking around the stand. And I was just thinking, Jesus Christ, the monetary value of some of these boys just walking around the place. Like, this Derry team is what, seventh in the league? I know nothing's decided in April. But as I said, I went to watch Derry for the first time in the flesh the other night. I've seen plenty of them on the telly and I've been very unimpressed. But you get a real picture when you see them there in person. I couldn't get over how negative they were, the way they were set up. And then, as you said, like, they're 2-1 up. Why are you bringing McLean on into his unnatural position as well? This is a lad that's still getting to grips with that central midfield position. That a lot of the Derry journalists were asking why he took James Clark off, who was their best player. Why are you taking Adam O'Reilly, a natural, probably one of the best sixes in the league, off to bring James McLean on? Is this what Roddy Collins was talking about? Is this a necessity, a pressure to play James McLean just because you have him there?
Well, I said a few weeks ago, this fella needs to come up with a muscle injury that needs to be on the sideline for 3 weeks. And, you know, to explain it away, he's carrying a knock. we have to manage this stuff. He played a lot of football. He was playing football up to Christmas, blah, blah, blah. He's in the latter part of his career. You know, we need to manage this man. He's going to be a great asset for us, but we want him healthy. So, okay, we need to get him out of this mess for 4 or 5 games and see if we can do better on the pitch, get better results. And he's not a lightning rod. Like, we've just put down right here, right now. Do you know what I mean? Like, we've been talking about James McLean. We probably should be talking about, what's it, the dominant performance that Dundalk had.
Yeah.
But the elephant in the room is still James McLean and Derry City as a whole. Like, you mentioned that they're nowhere in the league. They've managed to bring this marquee signing, the boy is home, the prodigal son, etc. And nothing has happened on the pitch. Like, it's been a right, you know, desperate start to the season. I know nothing is won in this part of the season, but shit is definitely lost. And, you know, they have a real mountain to climb to get back into that conversation, you know, come the last round of games. So,
I'm glad you said that, you know, we should talk about this dominant Dundalk display, because I was there. I would describe it as a dominant Dundalk display. I think most people watching would. You've described it as that. Mm-hmm. The only person who didn't seem to think so was Tiernan Lynch, who, again, if you go to the members club and you get the longer part of that interview, you'll hear him saying about how he felt that Derry dropped 2 points and that Derry did well to restrict Dundalk to few chances. Dundalk hit the post. Dundalk forced a number of excellent saves out of the goalkeeper. Dundalk had a number of sitters. They blazed over the bar from a couple of yards out. Ball just wouldn't fall to them at times. They absolutely battered Derry for much of this game. And it was, I couldn't believe when they went in 2-1 down at half time. When they got to 2-2, I turned to Kieran and I said, you have to be going to win this now. A point is no good here after the way they've played. I'll play the full Kilduff interview in a couple of moments' time now. I did say to Kieran after we finished recording that I have to say, out of all the games I've been to this season, that was one of the most enjoyable performances I've seen from a team. The way they set up, real aggressive nature to their play, playing on the front foot. They've been a breath of fresh air since they've come from the First Division. The likes of Aruby, Kenny, Teton, they've been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, there's a lot of lads that were in the First Division last year that are really, you know, taking the bull by the horns and the opportunity again in the Premier Division.
Oh, Tyreek Wilson, aside from the amazing goal he scored defensively as well, he put in a brilliant performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and you need to be doing that. It's very difficult to come up and stay up. You know, even remember when Galway and Waterford came up, you know, we were praising them up, down, left, right and centre, and it's gone to shite a bit for both of them. You know, it's always harder to keep that, you know, freshness into the following seasons. You know, players move on, they're picked off, and different decisions are made. So, look, you can only play what's in front of you. You can only play the games. Like, Kieran Kilduff can't be worrying, just what state will we be in 18 months' time when we're coming towards the end of the 2027 season. So I think results like this, it's a fantastic position to be like, Jesus, we dropped 2 points against this shite Derry team. You know, that's one way of looking at it. And from, you know, for anyone that didn't watch the game, I watched a chunk of it there on Friday. If you just look at the stats, you know, and these are the good stats, they look to be Y Scout stats, so someone looked at this game. They're fairly dominant. And I know stats aren't evident, and I don't give a shit about stats, but, you know, it is a fairly stark picture from what we saw.
Yeah, like, I'm looking at flash score here. They're not always as accurate as the likes of Y Scout, as you said. XG, our old buddy, 2.48 Dundalk, 0.97 Derry, 67% of the ball for Dundalk. That feeds into what I was saying about how negatively Derry were set up with a back five. Total shots 24-8 for Dundalk. 8 shots on target to 3. 6 corners for Dundalk and none for Derry City. That's something I didn't spot on the night, that Derry didn't get a corner. And Derry 9 yellow cards and the red card. And one of those yellows was for the goalkeeper for time wasting. So they were time wasting a long way from home as well, were Derry.
So what type of... That's dominant. What does a non-dominant performance look like from Derry in Tiernan Lynch's eyes?
You'd have to ask him.
I've no intention.
Was LOI TV? Was it his LOI TV interview where he talked about how they did so well to come from a goal down? Isn't that what he said when they went?
Yeah, he said from
So he obviously wasn't watching the same game as everyone else.
And I thought when I was looking at that interview, I was like, "Oh, Dundalk must have been 2-1 ahead." I nearly started questioning my own two eyes when I saw the interview, and I was like, "Look, people misspeak all the time, and you know, sure, I'm the king of it on this bloody podcast myself." But I think
he reiterated it a couple of times in the podcast, though, or in the interview.
Oh yeah. Well, look, you know, no one there to correct him, on one hand. But look, is this really quick question? I know we're giving a lot of Derry a lot of airtime here. Is this Michael Duffy situation much bigger than what we might think? Like, is Tiernan Lynch going, Jesus, I don't have the lad that bails me out when I need him to bail me out. What am I going to do?
Again, I asked Tiernan about Michael Duffy. He's definitely not going to be back in the next week or two. He was getting a scan today, I think.
Right.
And the number that's floating around is 6 weeks, but I'm not sure where that's come from. But it definitely sounds like, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks anyway. So
are we?
They're in dire trouble. They're in dire trouble.
But we could be looking at, we're not going to risk him before the break.
Possibly.
That's a long time away.
Yeah.
We should be on a plane to Mexico. But now we're worrying about whether Michael Duffy will be back. But like, that's a, you know, P0 problem here for Tiernan Lynch. If he doesn't have the lad when the chips are down that can pull something out of the fire, who's going to drag them over? You know, who's going to turn that shitty draw at home to Sligo? Who's going to pull that out of fire? Who's going to drag that into a win? Yeah. Who's going to, you know, get the 98 minute equalizer? Like, you're not, and this goes back to the characters. Like, I don't see enough characters that are doing that.
Yeah,
I don't know why they're being defended so deeply.
Yeah, you did. You took a few pelters for that comment on last week's show that you felt it was a bad team, badly coached with bad characters. One thing I again found interesting was how. I found it interesting how some of the players were reacting with Tiernan Lynch the other day. As I said, it felt like
you mentioned Winchester.
He was the captain, so I suppose he's entitled to go over and talk to the manager. But I just felt it was happening a lot as if he didn't really know what was expected of him, what was wanted of him. A lot of the players
Ball going into the net. How start there, pal?
A lot of the players didn't look comfortable in their position. And one player that was brought in. Seems like a bit of a panic signing, really, more than anything, was Cotter. And he tried a few things in the first couple of minutes, didn't come off, and I didn't see him for the rest of the game after that. Wilson shut him down all night, and the likes of a Ruby and Kenny and Boyce just absolutely turned him inside out. He had to be hooked on 75 or 73 or whatever it was.
Not offering nothing.
No. So, you know, this is a lad you've brought in from England for big money. Where's the character there? Where's the, you know, I've come here to be a difference maker? No, didn't fancy it.
Wasn't there talk about his character before?
I think it's a fairly open secret around the league that he hasn't been the most, apparently hasn't been the most harmonious character in many a dressing room down the year.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I wouldn't
maybe
be.
Maybe I was onto something, was I?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, look, I don't have much more to say on that game, but I would like to bring everyone that interview with Kieran Kilduff. So let's hear from Killer.
Kieran, a really good performance from your team again tonight. You must be scratching your head as to how you didn't come away with the 3 points.
Yeah, there's probably a little bit of disappointment and frustration in it, but you don't like coming out every time you don't win saying should have won or disappointed or whatever. But that is the feeling. I can't hide it. It's we had an objective to win the game. We probably felt especially second half, we played well enough to win it. We've equalised, hit the post, we've done everything but score before we equalised, and just probably felt like we ran out of time.
I was going to ask you, did you actually make it difficult for yourselves, I suppose, giving away the goals? But there was an awful element of misfortune with some of them, huge deflections.
Yeah, we could have been 2-0 up. I think Bucco has a header early on, and then Decky goes in 1-on-1 and kind of keeper makes a save, and you're going, okay, we're well on top, and then we concede off a throw-in, and then we work hard and react, and brilliantly, great goal from Tyreek, and then give away a silly free kick on the edge of the box, and it's taken a deflection or two and ended up in the back of our net, and you're going, probably wasn't perfect in the first half, but we were punished royally for it. And then second half we've dominated it, and on every metric, you know, possession, shots, corners, everything is.
And you really restricted them to very few chances. There was obviously the breakaway where Josh Thomas could have maybe put the game to bed and made it 3-1, but aside from that, I can't remember Enda making a save, really.
No, I think when you're losing the game, transitions, they're priced in that they can hurt you on that. You're giving them that one and hoping that you can break them down the other end. And we've had some huge chances to score and equalise earlier. And then when you do equalise, I think you've 20-odd minutes. Probably a little bit disappointed. Thought there'd be more stoppage time because the game seemed a lot stop-start. I'm not bemoaning it, but we've had a player sent off for time waste on Monday, our captain, for tonight. And obviously, listen, you have to do it sometimes, but we need consistency with those decisions as well. I don't think that, I'm not saying anyone from Derry should have been sent off. I'm just saying maybe Daryl shouldn't have been sent off when it's so small margins. But look, it's a tough job as well, and it was a tough night tonight for everyone involved. But yeah, look, at all in all, it's probably just, yeah, there's probably a feeling like maybe 2 points dropped.
Yeah, no Daryl Horgan, no Vinnie Leonard, there's loads of others you can tell me.
Mullen, yeah, Connor O'Keefe.
Makes it all the more impressive.
Yeah, but look, I was never, as I said, there was not one moment in that entire prep or during that entire 95-6 minutes where I would have taken a drop. I wouldn't until the last kick. We wanted to win that game and we didn't, and it's testament to the group. There's probably so many good traits in it. 7 points this week out of 9 is positive, but if you had drawn the first one and then won the next two, it feels better tonight. Those 6 were in the bag, so it wasn't really that. It was 3 points were up for grabs tonight. We got one, and yeah, look, at that dressing room is very much like that. We weren't celebrating any draw there tonight. Yes, there's positives in it, but unfortunately for me and unfortunately for them, that's the way we are. We wanted more and probably felt we could have got it.
I know a lot of people have been asking you recently and talking about the likes of Ruby, Owen Kennedy. Their performances have been incredible for players stepping up to this level. One player I'd like to ask you about is Ronan Tehan. He's obviously playing at this level for the first time, and he's just taken to it like a duck to water. Even in terms of his physicality, he looks like he's more than able for the players around him physically.
Yeah, well, look, that's why we signed him. We saw what he was last year. He scored 2 goals here against us, and we nearly watch every game in that division, and I knew his quality. And yeah, look, he's trained twice in the last 4 or 5 weeks. He's been injured. Probably got more tonight than we planned. But that's what he can do. He has that ability of getting into the box, scoring goals, running from deep. He's athletic, he's strong, he's coachable. Massive flair for us. And we're just delighted he's back, and hopefully he stays back. And there was no reoccurrence there tonight. He looked a bit jaded in the dressing room, but that could have been because he feels like the rest of us a bit disappointed with the overall result. But we'll get lads assessed and just link in with them over the weekend, let them all recover, and hopefully he'll be good to go for next week.
This time last year, if you had this many injuries, people would probably be asking you, is it the pitch? You can't blame that now. What do you put it down to, all these injuries you're picking up? You have quite a few long term ones.
Yeah, look, at it's not the pitch. It's we are a little bit aggressive in everything we do.
Yeah.
You know, we train hard, we play hard, we're very solid and resolute. You can see with even our suspensions.
Was that his fifth yellow?
Yeah, he's another one coming now. But listen, we're not advocating for red cards or anything like that. I'm just basically making the point that we are very front-footed. We go and attack teams, we're aggressive in our press, we go at times 1v1 defensively, and that comes to Vinny getting sent off in Tala where you get done with Aaron Green, but it's priced in. Obviously ill-discipline is something we'll never tolerate, but now look at that's on the that's on that side. On the injury side of things, again, there's a high demand on the body. There's a 3-game week, so managing the squad the best we could, and to be honest, I've said it a few times, there's been one or two out there playing tonight that were, you know, struggling anyway, so they've got through the game. Thankfully, everyone, listen, the long term ones aren't as long term as initially maybe. Connor Kearns, for example, he'll be the longest one, but Rob Cornwall's nearly back, Danny Mullen's nearly back, Ronan Tehan is back, Leo Gax will be back this week, so thankfully the cavalry are coming.
your team is playing really entertaining football as well. How important is that to you as a manager?
Yeah, look, I tried to be, from managing with Athlone to last year in the first division to this season, we've tried to be positive and we try to get after teams. I've no interest in being, what's the word?
Pragmatic.
Yeah, maybe pragmatic's a good choice. I was going to say beige. Listen, we're not here to entertain or anything like that, but we have a style. In the off-season, when I was signing certain players, they needed a certain trait. There has to be a front-footedness about them, an aggressiveness about them, a fearlessness about them. I think that's carried us so far this year. But the season's not even a third of the way there yet. There's bigger tests to come. There's going to be a bad run of form somewhere along the way. It's not always like this. I've been around football and League of Ireland football to know. Obviously, there's us on a good run and Derry on another, probably the other side of the sword. And it's hard. And we'll get tested too at certain stages. But we definitely are a positive group. I think the player profile and the way I want to do it here and the staff want to do it is that front-footedness and a braveness about us. And it helps, Kieran. I'm not going to lie to you. It helps when you're newly promoted and you are the favourites to be relegated. You buy into that then, and there is a fearlessness to it.
Has that been part of your messaging to the players? Have you used that as a motivation, what's been said or what's been written elsewhere?
Every single game, we have it up on the wall. That's our motivation. We were the favourites to be relegated. And we're just trying to write a few. That's what football is. There's players who probably want to ram it down my throat in years to come if they move them on. Everyone has fuel, and you use it. Us as a group, they're a very, very motivated group. They all have chips on their shoulder. They all have their own internal motivations. But as a group and as a club, we have few. But it only takes you so far. It doesn't guarantee anything. We could still be relegated. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing achieved right now. But that is what we feed off. That's our fuel.
And just final couple of questions, it's very cold. That intensity you talked about and playing on the front foot, how do you maintain that? Can you maintain that throughout a 30-game six season, or will there be times where you need to maybe change your approach, certain game weeks, etc.?
I believe we can. I believe that group are capable of it. I believe I have a great sports science department. I have great staff. The club are very supportive. And I have a great group. Those lads give me everything every day. They don't shortchange. And probably, as I said, coming back to the player profile, not only of what we kept, but what we brought in, is there's an honesty to them. They're going to do a day's work. Do you know what I mean? And they're going to give everything on the pitch. And I think that's what is refreshing about the way we're probably trying to do this. It's not your typical newly promoted style. And until it starts to unravel and until it goes awry, we're going to keep trusting it, because we've built it that way. We went after players that can be durable, who can go after things. Injuries are part of the way we play, because we're so, we don't come in and have a demo session very often. They don't want it. Do you know what I mean? You try and tell Daryl Horgan or Aid Irvin or players like that who've been here with me for the whole 2 years to have an off day. We don't like it. I don't like coming in here wasting time looking at lads stretching. It's definitely needed, but I'm saying we work hard here, and we work hard on the pitch on Friday nights, and I think you can see that, and it's reflected in our performances.
Yeah, certainly can. Finally, did you have to alter your travel arrangements, or did you have any hiccups on the way down?
I did personally. We obviously, everyone's making their own way because it's a home game for us. I was on some road and there was grass in the middle of it, so my Google Maps got an awful down there on the way, but I got here on time. It was funny actually, it was the first night everyone was early, because obviously some of the lads in the WhatsApp group had flagged in that this is closed and that is closed. So I'm hoping to get home by Sunday now. I've a long road ahead of me. You're not going to Longford yourself, are you?
I have to go tomorrow, yeah.
I'm going to Kildare, so I'll let you know how the road's.
Yeah, good man, thank you.
We really hope you're enjoying this week's episode. Feel free to show your support by leaving a rating or review wherever you're listening. You can also support the show by buying us a virtual beer or coffee via buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI, where you can also join our members club for all the latest exclusive BTS content.
Right, into the First Division games over the course of the weekend. There was one postponement. That was the game between Treaty United and Cork City. Of course, that's a fate we have suffered before, Gary, a late postponement down in Limerick. But as you said at the top of the show, finally a little pick-me-up for ourselves, a win for Longford Town. This game easily could have been postponed as well on the Saturday. It was absolutely horrendous conditions for a game of football, but well done to Seamus Murray and the ground staff out there at Bishopsgate. Got the game on.
And Longford came out on top in what was a real old slog in the end against Bray Wanderers.
Yeah, it was. It was tough game to watch. There was a bit of quality at times, but like it was really, really sparse.
It was a war of attrition, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, like the conditions didn't really help at all. The pitch stood up fairly well. I don't remember too many lads slipping or sliding or much of that going on, but it did get a bit heavy as the game went on. Look, I don't really give a shit, to be honest, as long as the town won. I'm not going to say that I don't, like, they weren't that far off it. I know you said on commentary that against the run of play, and Bray were probably the more dominant team as it went on, but they didn't really capitalize on their chances.
But they didn't really force the keeper into a save. I do think Longford's goal came against the run of play at the time.
Yeah.
But this is the sort of game, really, I think I made similar comments about the game Longford lost to Cove earlier in the season, which was played in equally with bad conditions. But this is the sort of game, I don't think you overanalyze it at all, really. Longford maybe in the end, you could say, wanted it a tad more. But I think I said at the end of the commentary, you'd have to give credit to both sets of players. There was no lack of effort despite the really, really difficult conditions. It's just Longford that shared it in the end. So I wouldn't be running away with myself as a Longford fan, and I wouldn't be too despondent if I was a Bray fan. That's how I'd be viewing that game the other night.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's fair.
The big positive for Longford is 4 clean sheets in 10. I probably will look at this for commentary notes at some stage, but did they even get 4 clean sheets last season? Just about, if they
got 6 clean sheets last year.
There you go.
I think at this point they'd over 20 or over 20 goals conceded. I think it's 9 now.
Yeah.
So I think what one thing that Wayne Groves mentioned was he wanted a bit of a quicker start. I think Andy Parrish said that as well in his interview the other night. But okay, that hasn't materialized. But the goal concessions that, you know, if you remember some of the shite that were conceded last year was deplorable. You know, lads going round hurling themselves at it and doing nothing with it. You know what I mean? Like, bodies on the line, but like, bodies going everywhere, but it was still not being booted away from the goal. So, like, I think Wayne Groves deserves a lot of credit, both in, of course, Conor Rarity, Taylor McCarthy at centre back.
Cole,
Cole for him on, yeah, deservedly so. Was Azzy Erhu, which is, these are all huge positives that, you know, they've all come in and made a significant contribution. So, you know, hats off to Wayne for doing that. The other thing, what a positive for Longford Town, Aaron Dorn is back in the midfield.
Looked a bit more himself, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Niggle hopefully is niggled away with itself, it's gone, and he'll be back as a mainstay in the centre midfield, because he's such a creative player. Longford could do with that.
Meanwhile, Finn Harps took on Cove Ramblers on Friday. You couldn't have wrote it, really, could you, that fixture would be taking place last weekend of all weekends, but they got there anyway, Cove, and that lengthy journey was worth the while. They won by 2-0 to continue their resurgence.
Absolutely, yeah. It's starting to, their season is really up and running now. They've had a great last few weeks.
They had to wait. The goals came 73 and 82, so took a while. But
it took a while, and to be fair, Harps had some really good chances in the game. Martin made some good saves as well. But the conditions were really, really tough. Like,
yeah.
You could barely hear the, if you look at the highlights, you could barely hear the commentators in one specific section. The rain was really battering off the gantry up there, and disappointing night for Harps. But really positive for Cove. Obviously, winning 2-0 away is great, but like that journey, heavy pitch, all bad news for an away side traveling up there. So to get
shows a bit of hardiness. And again, we saw that against Longford earlier in the season when they played in really boggy conditions, and they just we touched on it after that Longford game, that little bit of experience they have. Buckley, who got a goal the other night, you know, he's quite experienced. A couple of other players there as well, like Brendan Frahill, who's been around the block with them. Just one or two players there that just in games like that can help players around them. So that's quite a young Finn Harps team. So maybe again, it was just that little bit more know-how that got Cove over the line.
Yeah. If you look at the goals as well, like basically two scrambling messes around the 6-yard box. Like, yeah. It wasn't like there's no Pushkash award contenders in that one.
Wexford continued their resurgence as well. They were 1-0 winners against Athlone. Probably a result we weren't too surprised with, in all honesty.
No, and it was a free kick. I don't know if you saw Adam Verdon. Didn't know he had it in him. Smacked it into the top corner from a good journey out. It was a right smack, to be fair to him.
Another game played in a bit of a monsoon.
Bit of a monsoon, bit of a serious situation down there as well. You have to hand it to both teams, or both grounds, and the staff there to get those two games going. Like, it was biblical at times, to be fair. I think we were texting her on Friday night going, Jesus, are we going to be in a bit of bother here in Longford? But, I think we're probably more worried about the protests than, traveling down to Longford rather than the actual conditions, because we do have good faith in that pitch there. So, another good result for Wexford. Are they up to second?
They are.
When was the last time that happened? At any point ever?
It's been a while, isn't it?
Absolutely has. Do you think they'll be able to keep a hold of it?
I'll come back to that, because just the next one is Kerry 1, UCD 1.
Yeah.
You would ordinarily say probably not a bad result for Kerry at home, but given their start to the season, it just mounts more and more pressure on them that they've had this slow start and they're not climbing that league table. But just on UCD, I've spoken to a lot of different players and people around the league, and I've been asking them, what do you think of this team? What do you think of that team? Outside of Cork City, obviously, and like a lot of players won't even say, I've been the most impressed with Cork, because duh. A lot of people are saying to me how impressed they are with this UCD team. So you're asking me there about the battle to be best of the rest. I think it's between probably UCD, Wexford and Bray, but like I'm not giving anything away there, am I?
No, you're not really going on a limb.
No.
I definitely see what you're saying. Like, and even the goal that, it was a last minute equalizer for Kerry. I think it deflected off a UCD defender as it was traveling towards goal. I think it was 95th or 6th minute or something like that. It was right at the end of the game. And that's always lovely. No matter who you're playing or who you are, you always want to be in that realm. But I think the main issue is that was pulling it out of the fire to gain a point. But I don't see where's the next win coming from, really, for Kerry. They had a good win at home. I think the only win against this season was, I think it was against Harps, I think.
Yep, you're right.
All right. There you go. Not too bad. Not just a hat rack. So those are the teams, I would say, Longford, I thought, did well down there to get a point out of it. A really horrible place for Longford down through the years. I think they've only one win down in Kerry, so that was a boost from a Longford perspective. But
would you be surprised if I told you Kerry had the most goals conceded in the league this season?
No, I wouldn't be surprised in the slightest. Why would I be surprised about that? Like, I would say, I don't rate Hakkinen. I do rate Halwax, but like, if the chances are coming in, they're going to get pegged in by you, and there's not as much. Like, are you surprised?
I suppose just like in terms of you're hearing a lot of discontent about Treaty. They're obviously the bottom team, so and you look at teams like Athlone that score plenty of goals and concede plenty of goals. I would, if you just asked me there before I looked at the table, who was the most conceded, I probably would have said Treaty or Athlone. So to see Kerry there, it just reinforces further what a poor start it's been. And we've spoken about Kerry so much on this podcast ever since they came into the league in their first couple of seasons. You know, we were like praising them a lot for stepping up to this level and trying to be competitive, but they were shooting themselves in the foot, giving away individual mistakes and sometimes decisions going against them, et cetera, et cetera. But like those excuses don't wash anymore because you touched on them there. Okay, I know you're not a fan of Hakkinen, but is he a first division winner? Was he in a Cork first division winning team? I think he probably was.
I think he was, and then went to Cove.
Went to Cove, who reached the playoffs last season. He's got Killian Campbell alongside him, which we would have viewed as a massive coup to get him in there. So that's one of the most experienced centre-half partnerships probably anywhere in the country. Now, elsewhere, Bargery going in there, we looked at that as a massive signing. Kelleher's back getting closer to getting fit. They brought Murphy in from Cove. McGrath's still there. Like, there's enough players there that you can't be used. You know, experience isn't an excuse anymore.
No. And you hope, like, when you add experience like those players that you've mentioned, that that's driven away out of the side. You know, those stupid mistakes, they're blowing their own feet off, never mind shooting themselves in the foot, etc. So what's the...
An experienced manager gone in as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm not hearing too many great things about the whole setup either.
Mm.
So, you know. And I think the attendances have dropped off as well.
They have.
So, you know, it's a lot of things being added up there to not a massively positive situation. Mm. So, it's always difficult.
I think we've got some Kerry content in the hotline, so we might be talking about them again later on. But before we go into this week's Predictions League, we are going to hear from our special guest this week, and that is the chairman of Meath FC, Mark Jacob. They're obviously looking to take their first step towards joining the League of Ireland, hoping to enter the Academy Leagues over the next couple of years, and with a view to eventually having a senior League of Ireland team in possibly by the 2030s. So, yeah, a very, very interesting chat. This is Mark Jacob, the chairman of Meath FC, on this week's Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Now, I'm delighted to say we are joined on this week's Between the Stripes LOI podcast by the chairman of Meath FC, and that is Mark Jacob. Mark, welcome along.
Yeah, thanks, Kieran. Happy to be here. Thanks for the time.
Not at all. I suppose, Mark, there's been whispers and rumours for many years that there might be a Meath entity at some stage looking to make the leap into the League of Ireland, and we got the news last week that you're looking into starting out maybe in the Academy Leagues and then building your way into the senior ranks by maybe the 2030s or so. Why now, I suppose, for what makes now a good time to launch a Meath club into the League of Ireland?
Good question, Kieran. Really good question. I suppose there's a few things that play into that, right? You know, I think starting with the level of player in the county has really started to come up in the last number of years. And I think, you know, there's lots of factors behind that. I think a lot of good work done by the FAI, particularly the regional development officers over a long period of time, probably 10 or 15 years. On top of that, I think it was a really good NRL Academy structure, which was formed into ETP, Emerging Talent Programme. Really strong structure put in place 6 years ago. And by strong structure, I mean, you know, a really high level of coach coming in at that level, both on the boys and girls side. And what we started to see is, in particular, that NRL Academy really starting to compete at the highest level in the country. And then on top of that, like, you know, Meath is an absolutely huge county, right? So it's the fifth biggest county in the country, second fastest growing county in the country, right? And I think it's mature enough now in terms of population. It's mature enough now in terms of the talent that's coming through. It's mature enough on the coaching side, which is something that we really lacked. And I see, you know, I would also add in the clubs. The clubs have done a really fantastic job in the county. A lot of the clubs now in need of, you know, re-stepped up their game and even bringing in academy directors, you know, at the youth level and really working on coaching programs and, you know, trying to increase contact time. And so I think there's a lot of good work happening all at the same time in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years. And that's kind of, that's the backstory to this, you know.
Who exactly are Meath FC? Who's involved? What's involved?
Yeah, so it's a kind of, at the moment, it's a core of three people, although we've been doing multiple interviews for various different roles in the last couple of weeks, right? But essentially, it's myself, as the chairman. You know, my background is I've been involved in junior football in Meath for 30 years, right, playing for 20 years in the Meath and District League, as it used to be called. It's now called the North East Football League. Every single division, 4-3-2-1 Premier. Played a couple of years Leinster Senior League. I also coached in the Meath and District League for 8 years across all divisions. And then when my son started playing football, started getting involved in schoolboys coaching. And I've been up in Shelburne in the DDSL side of things. And I've been in the NRL Academy for the last 6 years. So very much a, you know, strong football and good background in the county. Aside from me, we've got Ger Lynch. And Ger Lynch is our peer loan communications officer. Ger has a really strong background in marketing and communications, and worked at a corporate level. And he's also a very successful podcaster. So he's got his own podcast, Leeds United View. He's won a few awards in the last few months on that. And on top of that, then we brought in Dave Quinn. So Dave Quinn would have been the chairman of Dunshopping Youth Football Club. So hugely fast growing football club in Meath over the last, I would say, 8 to 10 years. And Dave's done a fantastic job in growing up that club, schoolboys teams, senior teams, men's teams, women's teams, over 35 teams. And he's very experienced in terms of getting all the facilities and all that in place as the club was growing. So we handpicked people for their skill sets. You know, not all just football people, I would say, right? But and we've identified a number of other roles. I think we've 15 other roles that we're trying to fill at the moment, both on the footballing side and non-footballing side. Particularly on the non-footballing side, we're identifying gaps that we have in our own skill sets, and we're looking to try and fill them. So yeah, really busy time at the moment.
I suppose the underage leagues in the League of Ireland, they've brought about an opportunity now for clubs from areas that aren't already represented to step in and try and take that step towards senior football. A lot of the previous examples we've seen are clubs that are maybe linked up with schoolboy leagues in their area. That doesn't seem to be the case with Meath FC. You're not officially affiliated with any league.
Yeah, no, like we're a standalone entity, right? But as you know, like we're working on this 3.5 years, Kieran, and you know, the hard part of this was try and keep all the stakeholders on board, right? So, you know, you can affiliate yourself to a league and get everyone on board that way. But like the key stakeholders in Meath are the clubs first and foremost. So we've met 28 of the 36 clubs in the county over the last 18 months. And kind of told them what we're working on and wanted to see what the response with that was like. And absolutely, I would say, you know, bar a handful, less than one handful of clubs, you know, absolutely a resounding support for that. So there's a lot of work done in that in terms of just covering the bases and covering all the clubs and covering all the ground and meeting all the right people and getting them to the table. And then on top of that, then obviously we had to get support of the senior league, which is North East Football League. And we met with their committee and, you know, I think they're really, really behind us. Meeting the schoolboys leagues. They were very strong. Like we won schoolboys league, North East Regional League. They were a very strong league in the county and they're behind us. And then we have the North East Regional League Academy. That's where I work today, actually. So I'm the boys development officer in the North East Regional League Academy. Have been in there for the last 6 years. And, you know, there's a conflict of interest, you know, at under 14s emerging talent program and the SFAI and then under 14s League of Ireland. So, you know, how do you tackle those kind of things and will everyone still be on board? And so we're working with all the stakeholders, but we're not tied or affiliated to any, right? So, that has been very, I would say, labor intensive trying to make sure that we keep all the stakeholders on board, because I think if you don't have all the stakeholders on board, it'll push resistance on you and it's going to be more difficult to move forward, you know.
It's good to hear that you've seemed to have an overwhelming amount of support there. You said there was just a small handful that aren't in favor of this. What would be their main concerns? What's the main concerns that you've heard about this project?
You'd be well aware of how the League of Ireland is structured at the moment, right, with Premier Division and Division 1, and now we've got the third tier, right? So, and we've been asked this multiple times, what about the third tier, right? And so I don't see it as a problem, right, for multiple reasons, right? Because third tier is for senior football, right? Where we're starting at academy level, and my opinion has always been, You don't build a house from the roof down, right? You put in the foundations, you build it from the bottom up, right? So our approach has always been, let's build it from the academy level. And then when we have enough good academy players coming through, and, you know, as we grow, not just on the footballing side, but on the financial side, we'll be ready with the talent and the finances and the facilities to step into whatever tier it is then, right? Whether it's tier four, tier three, or into that league, right? So, you know, other clubs have ideas on joining the third tier, and maybe they see us as you know, as a conflicting resource, right, or conflicting entity. But, you know, if you look at, I don't know, I give the example of, there's loads of examples. If you give Donegal as an example, right, 160,000 population, Donegal population shrinking, but you're Finn Harps up there, League of Ireland club. Now you've three teams gone in from the third tier, right, seen, right? And then if you take Dublin, you've got five League of Ireland clubs, and now there's another four, I think it is, gone in on the third tier. Right, so those five League of Ireland clubs have academies, they have, you know, Premier and Division teams, and now you've got four going in the third tier. So I don't think it has to be one or the other, right? I think Meath is a big enough county. It's a huge county. It's grown at a phenomenal rate. So
I suppose you are. I think that makes perfect sense what you've said. Build it from the ground up academy. And you can understand, as you said earlier, the quality of player that's now in the county, why you would want to keep the best players in Meath, because we've seen loads of Meath lads go elsewhere across the country to make a career for themselves. It'd be great to keep them in the county. So it's easy to see how it could be a success at academy level. I suppose when you do eventually get to the stage of thinking about fielding a senior League of Ireland team, let it be in the third tier or the first division, whatever it may be, how do you go about distinguishing yourself and building a support that could sustain the club? Because I suppose you are on the doorstep of both Dublin and Drogheda as well.
Yeah, look, this is the reason we created the entity Meath FC, right? And I don't know if you've seen some of the branding behind that, and we're tying it back to the county, and because we wanted to have an entity that the whole county can get behind. The population of this county is huge, like, so there's enough. Like, you take five League of Ireland clubs in Dublin at a population of 1.5 million, they've essentially got 250,000 that are pulling off, right? That's the same as what we would have. And I'm telling you, so when we launched this club, less than 5 or 6 days, it's amazing. Like, the social media side is just, it's off the charts, right? We're the biggest club in the county. We don't have a football team on the pitch, right? So that gives you an idea of the scale of support, I think, from the community that's behind this already, right? And you know, that community support and being able to tap into that population also opens up the ability for us to leverage a higher level of a sponsor or higher level investors rather than being an individual club. The scale gives you both of those fronts, right? And I think that's the way we create the separate identity. And yeah, it might take longer to get there, but I think you're doing it in the right way. You're setting yourself up for future success to do it this way.
And financially, how has this been funded, and how much are you expecting it to set you back in the short term, let alone the medium and long term?
Yeah, so of course, you know, it's a balancing act, right? So how do you fund any football club, right? So it's a mix of funding streams, right? So some of it's private, right? Some of it will be sponsorship, some of it will be registration, and some of it will be investors, right? So it's a multi mix, right? And, you know, we spent a lot of time on, you know, how do we start? You know, where do we start? How many age groups do we start with? How do we scale up? How long will it take us to scale up? And how do we build a business plan, commercial business plan, and a facilities plan to do that at different stages, right? So we've essentially three plans, which is, how do we get a team on the pitch? How do we get the full academy? And how do we get the senior? And those three plans need to run concurrently. They'll all end at different stages, but they all have to run concurrently, right? And that's why we're trying to really bulk up the board at the moment, because there's going to be a lot of work. You know, anybody can get a team on the pitch, you know, it's pretty easy, right? Or two teams on a pitch, but then it's the scale. How do you scale it? And how do you make sure you've got finances and the facilities to scale that in two steps, right? And that's where the heavy lifting is going to come in, right? And you know, we're going into this with our eyes open. We know it, once we start, you know, this is 7 to 10 years, you know, of hard work, right? And we're ready for that.
That was going to be my next question, in terms of maybe a timeline. I know it's probably a very changeable situation. You'll have to just roll with the punches as you go. But I know that kind of ballpark figure has been thrown out, that by the 2030s you'd hope to be maybe at senior level. But what's the timeline, even for the early days of this project? What are we looking at over the next months and years?
Well, look, you know, everything is pending approval from the FAI, right? So, we have a meeting with them this week, right? So, you know, we can't put a team on the pitch unless we're, you know, unless we're part of the League of Ireland Academy structure, right? So that's a super critical point we need to get over. But, you know, our intent and our hope is that we'd have our first teams on the pitch in 2027. And then we scale it from there. I think you're right, Kieran, like how fast you scale depends on a lot of things. You just cover them, which is how much support can you get? How much sponsorship can you get? And how much investment can you get, right? And, you know, I think I'm a firm believer you build it and they will come, right? And we need to do a really good job of the early stages of that. We need a really good job of those two separate business plans and how we work on those over the next couple of years, right? That will dictate how quick or how slow this goes, you know?
How have your dealings with the FAI been so far? Have you found them to be supportive of the project?
Yeah, look, you know, we've been talking to the FAI for almost 2 years now, right? And when we first pitched this, it was a different pitch, you know. We came in with a business plan and we were maybe trying to do too much. And they said, listen, come back and be a bit more realistic. And they gave us three things to go away with and put in place. And we've done those three things. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we're ready because we boxed off those three items. And we're going to meet them this week and, you know, we'll see how they feel about that, right? So, but yeah, we've been back and forward since middle of 24 now, right? So 18, 20 months.
And how are the confidence levels in terms of, do you think you'll get the green light or not?
I'm always very confident, right? I'm the glass is half full, right? But, you know, we need to hear that from the FBI, right? So, yeah, let's see how that goes.
Yeah. And you mentioned there's been a lot of activity on socials already since you announced your plans. Do you feel across the league, across the country, that there is good enthusiasm for this project? And have you taken a little bit of inspiration from seeing what the likes of Kerry have done in the last few years?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, I think there's so many new entities in the last kind of 4 or 5 years. Mayo is another one, right? And, you know, I think CK and I have been really, you know, really coming strong there in the last couple of years. And so I think there's lots of, and we've met a lot of these, right? So like in the last number of years, like I've met with Cork City, you know, with Mayo, we've met with a lot of these entities. So, you know, it's been done before, right? So why can't we do it here, right? I think we've as much as some of these other entities had when they had started, we have as much right now to get started as well, right? So we need some support from the FAI. I think we've got support of the county. We've got that as far as I'm concerned. Now we need support of the FAI to get us going.
Have you got a base? Where will you be playing out of?
Yeah, so we're going to play out of the MDL in Navan. So I don't know if you're familiar with the facility. So it's really, really good facilities. Four grass pitches there, full size. There's a full size Astro with lights. And there's multiple small side Astros there as well. Actually, there's a lot of League of Ireland games being played there every week already by other clubs kind of utilizing that facility, right? So that was one of the requests from the FBI is make sure you have a facility to play out of that meets all of the FBI requirements, right? And there's games being played out of there every week, right? So, you know, that's one of the big ones ticked off, right?
Yeah. Very good. Would in terms of women's football, is that part of the plan?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Like, you know, when you build up the academy structure, like it's boys and girls, right? So today at the age groups, it's 14s, 15s, 17s, and 20s on the boys' side, and then 17s, 23s on the ladies' side. I think there might be some talk of that coming back a bit younger on the girls' side. So the question is where do we start, and at what age groups, and then have we got the facilities and the sponsorship to grow that, right? So that's, you know, we're just closing off on the hiring on the academy director. And so we'll sit down with that person and decide, right, you know, what direction, how many teams, boys, girls. So that's, we're evaluating that right now, actually. We're right in the middle of that.
If all goes to plan, how big could this be? That'll be my last question to you.
I think it could be huge, Kieran, I'll be honest. But you know, I'm not a dreamer, right? And it won't happen. It won't happen by osmosis. It's going to take a lot of work, right? And I said to the guys the other night, so we're in constant meetings at the moment. And, you know, I said there's three milestones for me. The first milestone, you know, where I'll be very, very happy is when I see a team walking out on a pitch or first academy team in those jerseys. That's milestone number one. Milestone number two is when we've upgraded facilities, you know, where we can accommodate a full academy with some spectator seating and stuff, you know what I mean, which we're already working on, right, in terms of investors, not wrestlers. So that means we've got a fully functional academy, right? And then it's like, the last milestone is getting the senior team out on the pitch in a kind of a much bigger, let's say, facility and entity that can accommodate that. And, you know, that's the dream, right? But I honestly believe we can get there, but it'll be a lot of work, absolutely be a lot of work.
Yeah, look, it would be absolutely fantastic to see. We wish you all the best, Mark. Thanks so much for joining us. And I'm sure we'll check in somewhere along the journey again. And hopefully you get good news from the FAI in the next few days.
Thanks a lot, Kieran. Appreciate it.
Yeah, great to hear from Mark Jacob. We'd really hope that project goes well, Gary, in years to come. Well, look, hopefully in years to come, Longford will be in the Premier Division in Europe. We won't need to worry about Mead FC. But if Longford still are in the First Division come the early 2030s, it'd be nice to have a little trip to Navan, wouldn't it?
Yeah, not too far away. There is a bit of a, you know, well, there's lots of, you know, deserts of League of Ireland clubs, so around the country, so filling in a few of those gaps can't hurt.
No, certainly not. Right, let's go to the Between the Stripes LOI Podcast Predictions League. Now, I'm going to defend ourselves here and say there obviously were three postponements last week, so we were always expecting lower scores, but I think this was quite an atrocious week. The listeners, represented by, I think he was a Dundalk fan, Colin McGrain, 1 point is all they got. Gary, 1 point is all you got, and I managed to get 2 points. So that leaves the league table looking like this. The listeners, bottom for a change on 38 points. I'm second on 47 and you're on 53. So you've got a 6 point lead in the predictions league as we move into this week's.
Right. You're on 47 or 48?
47.
All right. Okay.
This week we're joined by Shelburne fan Brian Murphy. You see a lot of Brian and Barry Murphys around, so a very common name, but there you go. Right, predictions league. So Shells against Derry is where we will start.
Oh, James McLean carrying a knock, he'll probably start.
Suspended.
Oh, yes.
No need for the phantom muscle strain this
no
week.
No need for the phantom muscle strain. And he can do what he wants on the old socials.
Instagram story was interesting.
He had an interesting weekend there walking the dog. Jesus Christ. Look, you see all sorts, I suppose. I think Shelburne will have enough here. I think it'd be a very tight game, and I don't even know why I'm saying that. Maybe it's just my Dublin media anti-Derry hat on. What do you think about this?
Shells will get something from the game, but whether they win it or not, they're just so inefficient in front of goals.
Yeah, saying all that, I'm going to go 2-1 to Shells.
2-1 to Shells. Must see what Brian's gone here, actually. Apologies. Didn't jot it down. While I'm looking for that, Shells Derry, I'm probably looking at the likes of a 0-0, a 1-1, or a 1-0 to Shells, the usual. Just see what Brian's gone with here. He's going 1-0 Shells.
Yeah, fair enough.
That just leaves me. I suppose I will go for the draw just to split the difference. I'll go for a 0-0.
Yeah, very possible too.
Dundalk against Galway.
Two teams running well enough.
Two surprise packages, fourth against fifth.
Yeah. This is in Oriel Park, is it?
It is.
Oh, two games in a row.
Where they still haven't lost a league game under Kilduff.
Wow.
Yeah.
Get the statue up.
I think this will be on current form, etc., and how well they're playing. You'd look at that, and if you just had a gun to the head, you'd say, "Yeah, Dundalk." But Galway week off last week, they're in good form themselves. Dundalk scoring a lot of goals, but they do concede a few as well. Galway, so often on this podcast, we've talked about their boring football.
Yeah.
They've been involved in some absolute parlours the last few weeks. 2-0 down against Drogheda, win 3-2, beat Waterford 4-3, beat Derry 2-1. So I think we'll get goals. I think this could be a very entertaining contest. I'm thinking a 1-1, a 2-2.
And I think so as well. But one thing you mentioned, I think before, about Galway is that they're absolutely massive.
Yeah.
Do you think that physicality will come into this? You know,
No, the Dundalk are well able for it physically. Okay. 2-2 draw here.
All right, I'm going to go 1-1.
Okay, Brian's going the same. Drogheda against St. Pat's. Drogheda had the week off. Pat's back-to-back losses. Not an easy place to go. Brian going for a 1-0 win to Drogs.
Ooh. I can definitely see that happening, especially with the week off. You know, a bit of headspace, which would be good. No one having to do any interviews or shite. fair one, actually. Yeah, I'm going to follow Brian on the 1-0.
1-0 Drogs?
Yeah.
Okay. Difficult one. It is a difficult one, all right. Sure, most of them are. That's why we're getting such bad scores in the prediction league. I'll go for a draw. I'll go for another 0-0 here.
0-0? No, I don't see that now. I think there will be goals in this game.
Rovers against Pats. This should be a belter. Sorry, not Rovers against Pats. That's already happened. Rovers against Bows. Sorry, Bows fans.
Yeah. This is in Tala. Huge game. Probably on Virgin Media Television.
Yeah.
8 o'clock kickoff.
Pressure's on Bows here, isn't it? Because after what's happened, they've lost top spot to Rovers. This is a chance for Rovers to kind of kick one of their rivals aside early in the season, maybe. But Bows do always, as I said earlier, turn up for this fixture. They've got a great recent record, so
yeah. But
it's very hard to know with this one. Like, the form book goes out the window. I know that's a cliche, but it really does with this game.
Yeah, no, it definitely does go out the window. But
the worse Bows are going into this game, the better they seem to be on Derby Day. So the fact they've not won any of their last five, we probably know what's coming next.
Yeah, 3-0 Bows in Tala.
Yeah.
I don't see that happening, I'm afraid. I think it's going to be a very tight game. I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw.
I think it'll be a banger as well. I'm going to follow you on that and go for 2-2 draw. Brian is going for a 1-0 win to Rovers, and he's put up Lopez to score. It says it was picked out by my son. So great to have Brian and son tuning in.
Yeah. Bonus point there if Lopez does it. Actually, we should take away a point if he gets sent off. But obviously, he will never get sent off. He could obliterate the
immunity
ref with a punch and he wouldn't get sent off. It's insane.
That's a huge game, obviously. But is Sligo Rovers against Waterford an even bigger game on Saturday?
Look, obviously bigger for different reasons. We kind of touched on it already. Like, this is a real why in the road for obviously both teams, but particularly for Sligo. Like, are they going to, you know, grab the bull by the horns? Are they going to cap it or, you know, make hay when they can? They had a great result on Friday. Now it's their direct rival for relegation. Can they, you know, bury them? Now, this isn't a permanent burial, but, you know, there's a lot of season left to go. But, like, this would be a real kick in the bollocks from a Waterford side. So, and then it really opens up the questions about the manager again, as I said earlier. So, I think Sligo have to do it. They just really just need to go, right, boys, this is such a huge opportunity. Maybe it'll put Waterford into a bit of disarray. I'm going to go for a 1-0 win. No, sorry. 1-0 to Sligo.
You're going 1-0 to Sligo. Brian's going 2-1 to Sligo. As you'll know, Gary, I also do another League of Ireland podcast these days called League of Ireland Lowdown with Shane Keegan for Barwon Betting. If anyone that is interested in that hearing type of thing, more. They can check it out on Barrow and Betting's YouTube and Spotify. That's for over 18s only, obviously. But we were talking about this game today, and Shane described it as being the toughest game of the weekend to predict. So when I looked at the markets for the game, I found it very interesting that Sligo were hot favourites at around evens and Waterford were 5-2. Like, if it's the toughest game to predict, there shouldn't be that big of a gap between them in the market. So just from a sole value point of view, I don't want to turn this into a betting thing, but it's just, this is one thing that caught my eye. I probably would be just going with a Waterford win for value. But aside from that, they did show shoots of recovery before their game was called off last week with the draws against Bowes and Rovers. And obviously, defensively has been their issue. They've conceded, 21 goals? By far the most in the division. But Sligo haven't scored many. I think they've scored 2 home goals all season, Sligo. So home advantage here is no guarantee that they'll capitalise on it. Yeah. If Waterford can bring that newfound defensive resilience into the game, and I think I touched on it in a recent pod, the new keeper going in there, Arlo Doherty, a couple of little changes here and there. I think I always call him Keith Long, don't I? Kevin Long going in there. Seems to be a bit more soundness about them all of a sudden. And obviously, they've still got Podge Hammond and the boys up top to take a chance if it comes their way. So I think they might nick this and keep themselves in the hunt. I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Waterford.
Right, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
I see where you're going there. Yeah.
Yeah. Into the first division, we've got Kerry against Treaty in a Munster derby. It's the bottom two meeting in the first division here.
Wow. Probably an opportunity for Kerry to get another win on the board.
I think it's hard to see that. Treaty side.
Well, I'm just saying, like they'd have to look at it like that. They'll have to do something.
I'm going for a 1-1 draw.
I was going to go for a nil-all draw. But I do feel that Kerry could win this, nick it in the last minute.
But Brian's gone 1-1 as well, so do you want to go for a win?
No, I don't.
No, nil-nil.
Nil-nil.
Okay. Cove against Longford. Now, early in the season last year, Cove hammered Longford by 5-0. They've already played this season. Cove ground out a 2-1 win, as we touched on earlier, in bad conditions in Longford earlier in the season. But that was a fairly tight game. Longford have improved massively defensively, but they're not scoring many goals. So I would fancy Cove just to nick it, maybe 1-0 or so. But I think Longford should hopefully be able to avoid a similar outcome to their trip down to Coleman's last year.
Yeah, well, no, Barry Coffey, who was a major problem for Longford Town last year.
Dylan McGlade, though, will be up for this, of course, against his former club.
Yeah, but sure. Same as everybody, more loads of clubs. I'm going to go for a nil-all draw here.
Okay.
I think Longford's steeliness at the back is coming true. So, yeah.
Brian going for a 1-0 win to Cove. I'm going to follow him there. 1-0. Right, UCD against Finn Harps.
Tough game for Harps travelling down. I think I can't see really much past UCD. To be really disappointed conceding in the last minute on Friday. I'm going to go for 2-0 win to UCD.
You're going to. I don't think Brian's gone the same. If it is a 2-0, I don't think it'll be the most comfortable 2-0 in the world. I think Harps have done okay this season, only 4 points outside of the playoffs, 10 scored, 12 conceded, so that they're quite competitive. UCD only 13 scored, but only 7 conceded. So I'm going to go for UCD to grind this out 1-0, but I wouldn't be surprised if Harps got something out of the game.
Fair enough.
Then we've got Athlone against Bray. I'll go first on this one, Gaz. We saw Bray obviously go down to Longford, but as I said, I'd be putting a line through that game, writing it off, given the conditions. I was very surprised, given that Ferrazi scored in the comeback on Monday against Harps from coming off the bench, and Brennan came off the bench and scored in that game as well. Yeah. Brennan started the other day, and we'll get to him in a second, actually. Ferrazi scored in that game on the Easter Monday, and I would have expected him to go back in to the 11, and he didn't. Yeah. And Billy O'Neill was on the bench as well. So yeah, they had some serious talent there on the bench the other day. I'd be looking for the likes of those players to come back in. I think Bray can bounce back here against Athlone.
No, I can as well. It was definitely strange. Obviously, it was good from a Longford perspective because those players are dangerous. Why not? I don't know why they're not being why they weren't started in that game. Would have been an extra couple of bodies to have to worry about from Longford Town. So yeah, strange kind of decision. Didn't really make much sense to me. Considering, like, you know, they didn't come on and make a difference the other night. Why not start them? Like, you know, it's almost as if, like, oh, they played 10 games in the last 10 days. Mm. So bit of an odd one.
Yeah. There's a couple of lads that have gone in there. Like the likes of Tyreek Sammy there had a very mixed bag performance the other night. Osagie at the back wasn't fantastic either. So yeah, I was surprised to see a couple of those players on the bench the other evening for Bray. But I think if they put out their strongest team, I think that they'll beat an Athlone team that have lost form, bar that win over Longford. There hasn't been much to shout about there over the last few weeks. So yeah. I will go for a 2-1 win to Bray. They beat Athlone 2-1 earlier in the season. I'll go for the same again.
Yeah, I'll actually go 2-0 to Bray.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they actually win the game comfortably enough. Brian is going 2-0 to Bray there as well, and that leaves one more fixture. And
you were going to come on to Sean Brennan.
Yeah,
there.
Sean Brennan, so a player we've praised a lot on this podcast down the years. We've probably described him as maybe the best midfielder in the division. Left UCD last summer to go to Bray on reportedly a 2.5-year deal. I think they shelled out quite big to get him in there. And we saw in the playoffs, in particular against UCD, just how important of a player and acquisition he was. He really has the ability to get control of games and run games. And we saw that several times against Longford when he was with UCD, where Longford kind of sat off him and he just absolutely ran the game. But I felt the other night he was just way too comfortable, too deep, picking up the ball off his centre halves and making easy passes, and okay, it was nice and tidy, but having no real impact or effect on the game. And I would have, as a Longford fan, felt a lot more nervous if I saw him creeping towards the edge of the 18, the Longford 18-yard box, and picking up the ball there on the edge of the D and trying to open up the defence. Then I'd be getting nervous, whereas he was getting it the other night on the halfway, and I was like, don't really care, because he's just going to maybe drop a shoulder here and spray it to his left or spray it to his right, but he's not going to open up the Longford defence.
Yeah, I think that was a definitely a mistake in the approach from Bray. There was no real need to do that, like have him so deep. And he was doing a bit of the Chris Forster shit that I really don't like. You know, pointing here and pointing there and then spraying out the easy pass. Like it wasn't like, we'll say, the Sean Brennan that we know how dangerous he can be. There wasn't enough passes being sent through the middle.
No.
You know, and I think we might have mentioned on the commentary where it was kind of like, if we, you know, he can flick it on, he can make that little pass, he can put nutmeg a lad that opens up the defence to change a game, to get that chance, to get that goal. And that never materialised throughout the game. He was just playing way too deep and, you know, it's too late then.
Yeah, so just a few things there. If Bray alter them for the game against Athlone, I think they'll have more than enough there. Then we've got Cork City against Wexford. A couple of weeks ago, if you're looking at this fixture coming up, you'd probably be thinking, 3-4-0 Cork City. But Wexford have really turned a corner of late. So can they put up a fight here? Now, they did lose 4-1 at home to Cork earlier in the season. But as we said, they've turned a corner of late, Wexford.
Yeah. What do you think will happen here?
I think it'll be a routine Cork win, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so don't hear about any shite out of that. Like, 2-0 to Cork.
Going the same. Brian going 3-1 to Cork City. So that's the predictions league. Let's hope for a better outcome than last week. That brings us to the Bar One Betting charity bet. We could really do with getting a win sooner rather than later, Gary. It's been a very poor start to the season for us, but yeah, let's hope we can do a bit better this time around. What have you got in mind this week?
I'm going to go... Yeah, jeez.
Even I was doing my column for Bar One earlier on today, and very difficult, very few games you'd be certain of. Like, I'm looking at draw at a Pats. That's a game I'd be staying away from betting wise. Pats too short there at 5-6. The Dock too short, shade of odds on against Galway. I think Shelburne will get something against Derry, so we might consider them for maybe a draw and a bet or double chance or something. Rovers Bowes, I wouldn't be touching it unless I'm thinking maybe over 2.5 or both teams to score or something. Sligo Waterford, I do see value in Waterford, but would you be putting them in your charity bet? I'm not so sure.
No. UCD Harps is a good one.
You think so do you want me to put UCD in?
Yes.
Okay, UCD. Actually 21-20, so maybe a bit of value there.
UCD, Cork, and Shells, I think, is all we can really.
You're going for Shells win?
Yeah.
Okay. If I told you that's just over 5-1, would you be happy enough with that?
Oh, no.
No. You're obviously not going to put Cove in there.
No, I'm not.
I'm just looking. What you went 1-1 Dundalk Galway. Do you want to go both teams to score there, maybe?
Yeah.
Or you went?
No, I don't.
Rovers Bowes maybe safer on that front.
What's Dundalk to win?
Dundalk is they're slightly odds on at 9-10.
No value anywhere, is there?
No. I'm just looking at games where you went both teams to score Dundalk Galway, both teams to score Shells Derry. Both teams to score Rovers Bowes.
Rovers Bowes and Dundalk Galway.
Both teams to score. Okay, give me a second to tally that up. That should help us towards a nice figure, hopefully. That is going to bring it up to, yeah, nice. Almost 18-1.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Not a hope. Sorry, charity.
Will I lock you in anyway?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Right, so that's what you're going with this week. Let me clear the little betting slip here, and I will load mine up now. I am going to go... I'm going to put Waterford in there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try and get a big price up here. Waterford, I'm going to go with Shells to get something out of the game. We'll go Shells, draw, no bet. And then I'll dip down into the first division. Okay, first division, I'm going to go for Bray.
Right.
Go for Cork as well. Yeah, I'll stop there. I'll not get greedy. Nearly 16-1, so we're kind of both shooting for similar targets there.
Sound? Fair enough.
Lovely. So that's fingers crossed. That was the charity bet sponsored by Bar One Betting. Thanks to them, as ever, gambling for over 18s. Always gamble responsibly. That brings us to the BTS hotline, Gary.
Let's go.
Let's see what the people of Ireland have to say this week in the hotline. So we'll start with, let's see who we've got most recent first this week. Pat Mitchell, I'm a week late with this, but I missed the hotline last week. Which foul was more of a red card? Danny Mandrew on Conor Kane last year in the Cup quarterfinal, or A. Durbin on Keane Levy last week, or both the same? Well, one was a red. Oh, no, sorry. Neither player was sent off, were they? But Mandreu's was more. That was a scissors challenge from behind. That was a bad tackle. Durbin's was not that
barely
bad.
Barely a free. Don't want to hear any show. Was it more of a red?
Keane Levy played the other day. But
he played on the other night as well.
He was nearly killed, according to everyone.
Oh, stop the lights.
Nathan O'Reilly, if Kerry don't beat Treaty United on Friday, Colin Healy should be sacked. Performances haven't been good enough this season.
Yeah, I don't know about being sacked. Like, what's the... Like, really hard to know what's the expectations, we'll say, from within Kerry. Like, whatever about the fans, but like...
I think you touched on it earlier. There seems to be a bit of a smell down there, doesn't there? Bit of discontent, attendance is a
smelly Kerry, yeah.
Maybe they could do the Healy replace. They could do the Healy Rays making an appearance before the game Friday. Get them going.
That'd be one way of doing it.
Get a hero's reception, the boys.
the two teams at the bottom. Like, you're not going to just bait them because they're at the bottom.
As we love to say, the vibes are not good.
The vibes are not good. That is correct. No. But I don't see it just being that handy to go, yeah, Sam, we're going to beat Treaty and everything's rosy.
No.
That's not a runner here.
Git, with Rovers not having to get out of second gear realistically and still rotating a lot, are the signs ominous? And will this be over before the summer, Gary?
Don't think the summer. I think the summer is too soon. But as we mentioned earlier, I think Rovers aren't going to make the same number of hiccups that we might expect from a watery St. Pat's, as you called them earlier. You know, there is that soft centre in Pat's that is probably going to cost them as the season goes on. But I think the summer is too soon to say that.
Wonder who lasts longer, the government or the title race?
Government's going the distance, lad. You need to be paying attention.
But I just on Rovers, I think that Terminator mentality that you like to talk about, I think that will get them over the line.
Yeah, big time.
Whenever it may be, I don't know, summer, don't know. But
yeah, I think it'd be later in the summer, you know, into September. You know, the lights are starting to get a bit shorter again. I think that's when they'll, you know, and probably.
You never know with Europe, yeah, again.
Never know with Europe. And also, like, but I can just see in my mind's eye, you know, they put a couple of teams, they play on the Thursday, they play someone else on the Monday evening or Sunday evening and just batter them. Mm. So I think that's going to be a feature, actually. But a bit too early to say that for certain.
Stephen Clancy, great win for the Bitter Red on Friday night. Showed the fight and determination that we as supporters want to see. Not only to get back in the game, but to go ahead and hold out against a Bose team that battered us in the previous game. Massive game now Saturday against Waterford. I think we've already covered that.
Yeah, it certainly is. Yep.
Here's a surprising one now that I was surprised to read in the hotline. Owen
Tiernan Lynch in your message, was he?
Owen Bray Wonders fan. Hef, so obviously their manager, Paul Heffernan, under serious pressure at Bray. Now, don't know how much time he has with the new owners, but personally pray it doesn't come to that. Team look like they need fresh ideas, been poor all season, could have been there all night and not a hope of scoring. Longford very comfortable. I would find that madness if Paul Heffernan's under pressure.
Yeah, so would I. I think though, like, is this probably coming from like some of the quality of player that he has that this has been drawn from?
As you like to say, he's got quality players, but he doesn't have a bunch of ringers.
No, he doesn't. And he's I've seen some complaints about, say, Dan Ring on loan from Shells, that has not worked out.
He's a young lad.
No, I know that, but like I'm saying, like, you know, really, really bad comments in his direction.
No, I've seen that as well, but like, he's a young lad, so you're asking me, is it because of the quality of player? He's got a lot of players there that are totally unproven at this level. If you want to take out the likes of your Sean Brennan's, just looking at the team the other night, okay, Ben McCormick, who actually got the Player of the Month award. So they can't be playing that badly if he got the League Player of the Month award. Take out McCormick, take out Brennan from the other night, and Dean O'Shea. You got Sagi, who's on loan. Duggan is a fairly young player. Kazenga's a teenager. The young lad Doyle in midfield. They had the fella Azenda out on the wing, who was fairly hit and miss. I mentioned Sammy was fairly hit and miss. Kara is a player that played 30 games in the MLS and suffered an awful knee injury. And he reminds me of Christian McGerson. You can see he had that quality.
Yeah.
And you just don't know if he'll ever rediscover it. So that was their starting 11 against Longford the other night. Now, Ferrazi on the bench, O'Neill on the bench. They will be players I'm wondering why they're on the bench, but you're asking me if that's a squad that should be performing much better than they currently are. They are 1 point off second. Then the answer is no.
Yeah, what do you want?
What do you want? Like, take Cork City out of that there, then they're 1 point off the top.
Yeah, but also, like, if they won all their games, it'd be clear on top. Like,
But what's the expectation? The expectation to push Cork City is not realistic. The expectation to be in the playoffs is very realistic, and they are there, and I would fully expect them to be there come the end of the season.
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah.
That's it, really.
Well, thank you very much.
Some good ground covered this week, I feel.
Absolutely, yeah. Looking forward to Friday. I'm not travelling down.
No, won't make it to any game myself. Have a bit of an obscure commentary gig this week, bit of an unusual one, so.
Yeah, I won't make it to a game. I'll be watching Longford Town on Friday night.
Unfortunately can't travel, and who knows if I could get a petrol station with any diesel in it on the way down or up.
I'm just glad there was no questions about my €14 lunch in the hotline. That was a bad day.
Yeah. Well, you see, what I think has happened now, everybody on Twitter has muted you or blocked you because of your daily updates about the dinners you do be buying. As our good pal Lyle said on Twitter, or I don't know if he said it on Twitter, there's lads in the joy getting better feeds than that. Like, so I don't know what you're at.
Glad to report I cooked my own dinner this evening.
Oh my God. What did you have? Tell us what you had.
I had a peri peri chicken with some garlic potatoes, which were savage, and a bit of frozen veg. Now, I burnt the shite out with the chicken, but it was better than paying 14 quid for it.
Seen you coming. Really seen you coming.
Maybe we just need to go back to eating kebabs. Life was simpler.
You know, good kebab, bad kebab. That's the only decision, really.
Then again, thank God we're not going to Cove, because we never got a good one down there.
No, and I was down in Cork, as you know, a few weeks ago. I did make a spin out to Cove with the good weather that weekend, and I actually walked by that place. I actually made a point to go
it's
down.
Still going.
A shithole was there, yeah.
Still going, yeah. Wow.
I was going to boot their door in and wreck the place. It took a very long time to get over that kebab. Need to find another kebab location in that direction. But obviously, I had a very good spot down in Cork. So, Spice Root, I think it was down in Cork. So,
yeah, you were fond of that.
Fond of that one, yeah. We definitely need more kebabs in our lives for more BTS kebab reviews.
Yeah. Right, that's where we leave it. That was Series 10, Episode 11 of Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple, Spotify, wherever you're listening. Do leave a rate and a review as well on those platforms. Really helps us push up the charts and exposes the league to more potential listeners. A huge thanks to our sponsors, Quinn AV. Check out quinnav.ie for all your sound, lighting and AV solutions, and thanks to Bar One Betting for their continued support of the charity bet. For this week, for myself, Kieran Burr, from Gary Riley, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again soon.
Don't forget to subscribe wherever you're listening. You can also keep up to date with the latest League of Ireland news by following Between Stripes on X. Until next time, thanks for listening.